Rise and Climb with Anna, as I share stories of hope and healing through hardship to help you overcome the obstacles you face today. Whether you are a teen, single adult, parenting, or just simply learn best through stories, this podcast will keep you inspired to answer to the call to rise and climb to any occasion life throws at you. Enjoy.
They just didn't want anybody to escape Laos. And especially if they know that, you know, if they know that you come from a family of soldiers that, you know, worked alongside the Americans, they just wanted to execute everybody.
As you just heard, that was a snippet from the interview with C. Lore, one of my friends who escaped Laos to enter Thailand to seek refuge from the North Vietnamese people, soldiers chasing her and her family at the time. It's a very powerful interview, stories that just bring me to tears imagining what the families had to go through and then transitioning here in America and what that was like. So this first part is about that. The second part with C's interview was just too good to cut out and not have a part of it, but too long to keep in one interview. So that goes into her personal story about coming out of an abusive relationship, problems with pregnancies, and ultimately a medically complicated pregnancy as well. So very impactful, very relevant, and love sharing C's story. So please take the time to listen to both interviews. I think you will like them. With no further ado, let's go into part one.
All right. Hello, everybody. We are with C. Lore, and you are going to meet an amazing woman, but I'll let C. Lore introduce herself and then really introduce why we are even interviewing, because we go into her story and how her family came here. So without further ado, C., why don't you take it away?
Thank you so much for having me, and I truly appreciate you just wanting to learn more and obviously your interest in my background. So as you mentioned, my name is C. I am the oldest of nine, so I have a really huge family. Yeah. And then, I am married. I have four kids. I am going to say five because I do have my 10-year-old out the door, and she would be upset if I said four, and I will probably explain to you why four or five, I bounce back between four and five, probably later on.
Yeah.
My background is in accounting and finance. And then obviously I've done quite a bit of networking businesses too. So that is what I'm currently doing.
Yeah. Yes, which allows you to be with your kids, which is sometimes nice. Sometimes.
Yes, yes. And, you know, and it's when we think about accounting, I don't know, people who are in the profession, they think that it's fun. For me, I just got into the profession because numbers made sense to me, but it's not a fun career. Mm-hmm. It's very, you know, black and white, and I just needed to do something different, something a little bit more colorful. So,
yeah. And that's how I know C, through an internet marketing business that we work together in, and you're in the Milwaukee area.
Yes.
And somebody said, "Psst, Anna, you want to interview somebody with a crazy story. You need to interview C." So I reached out and C said, "Yeah, of course." So we got it in the books. And Laos, is that where you came from?
Yeah, so I was born in Laos, and Laos is a communist country. Mm-hmm. And so this Laos it's in a kind of a weird location because it's sitting between Thailand, North and South Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And so during the Vietnam War, the North Vietnamese were basically using Laos to get into South Vietnam. And so when the Americans got involved in the Vietnam War, they utilized the trail that was in Laos to attack and, And that is where they recruited a lot of Hmong and Lao people to help. So the majority of them were, you know, they're all very young. I would say they started recruiting boys as young as 11, 12 to train them. So I have, my dad has brothers that served in the war with alongside the Americans. And one of, so some of the things that they were trained to do is because Laos has just mainly like jungle. It's not something that Americans are used to. And so they wanted to recruit like civilians in Laos to help retrieve any airplanes that American airplanes that were shot down, to retrieve their pilots, their crews. And so a lot of the people in Laos, you know, they know their way around the jungle. They know how to survive in the jungle. And so that's what they were recruited for. So the more dangerous positions that you get yourself into, then they were paid a lot more. So I was born there, and obviously I was born after the war. So my recollection and my memories have never been bad.
Okay.
You know, so when I hear stories, it's like I don't have any of those memories. Mm-hmm. But when I hear stories about, you know, my uncles and my aunts and them struggling. So as soon as the war ended, a lot of the, once the North Vietnamese took over, they basically wanted to find all of the civilians that participated or that joined hands with Americans to like basically persecute them. And so that was where we, you know, tried to run away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And leave, because a lot of the, if you were known to be a part of like a soldier family, then they would capture them. They would basically just execute the whole family.
Wow.
Yeah. And mutilate they would mutilate a lot of the women, just like really horrendous things. But, you know, after this obviously happened way before I was born. So when I was born, the majority of my dad's side of the family, they've already immigrated to Thailand. And then they were where they landed in refugee camps for a few years. Mm-hmm. And then that was when the Americans, you know, tried to get back and to pull all the soldiers out of Thailand. And so they basically had like a priority
list, you know,
over everybody else. Yeah. And so that's how they got to America. And a lot of people settled, you know, all over the United States. So the biggest population is in California, then Minnesota, and then Wisconsin. And so we just happened to arrive in Wisconsin, and we were sponsored by a Catholic church.
Okay.
Yeah. So they sponsored our family. And you know, my dad didn't serve in the war, but he's the baby of the family. And so his brothers wanted to protect him. So they served, to make money to send him off to school so that he wouldn't get recruited. So he was the only, him and his older brother, they were the only two that have an education because their brothers did not want them to fight in the war.
Wow.
And so the older brothers, all their families are just, you know, they have way more incredible surviving stories than my dad because, you know, again, he didn't get married until after the war. His older brothers, they already had, you know, a family that they had to escape with. And so one of my uncles, he got separated from his wife. So, yeah. So he got separated from his wife and, he actually lost, one of his kids, his son. I think his son was only 2 or 3 years old. And he just could not take the food out in the jungle because while you're going through the jungle, some people get lost in the jungle for weeks, months. Mm-hmm. And you're surviving off of whatever the jungle can provide only. And for mm-hmm. a child that young, his stomach just couldn't take anything that was, you know, that they were eating. And yeah. so he passed. And while even going through the jungle, my parents, because they were so scared, we were constantly being chased by these soldiers. And my parents were so scared. So during this time when we were escaping Laos and traveling through the jungle, my dad obviously did not have any military experience, but because his brothers and them all left already, he just gathered with a group of people from the village to travel through the jungle to escape into Thailand. Okay. And yeah, so the communism in Laos and in Thailand was like very different. Laos, I felt like they were a little bit more strict. And once you cross over to Thailand, I felt like, I mean, the majority of my memories are in the refugee camps in Thailand. And obviously I didn't okay. have any bad memories. You know, all my memories mm-hmm. are like, oh yeah, I had a great childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause you're off play. I mean, kids right. don't know what's going on. They right. just play and sleep.
Yeah. yeah. And so, yeah, just escaping Laos was just trying to escape and, you know, persecution. Exactly. And because my dad was the youngest of his family, and they knew that he came from a family of soldiers and that his brothers were no longer in Laos. Obviously their goal was trying to capture him and capture our family. And so
the North Vietnamese was looking for you guys. How I mean, did they know?
I don't really know. Yeah. It's just, they just didn't want anybody to escape Laos. And especially uh-huh. if they know that, you know, if they know that you come from a family of soldiers that, you know, worked alongside mm-hmm. the Americans, they just wanted to execute everybody. So, we got lost in the jungle. Well, with my dad's with our family, it actually wasn't a long journey because they lived right by the jungle, and so they knew their way around already. But the hugest struggle with that is when you have soldiers chasing you and you have little ones. I think I was only 4 years old. My sister was 2, and my mom was 7 months pregnant with the third. And when you're traveling like that with little kids, you know, you're like, we're scared, we don't know what's going on, and all we hear is our parents saying, you know, be quiet, hurry up. And so the majority of the families or the parents, they would give opium to their kids to drink, and the opium basically mm-hmm. Knocks them out, you know. And some parents mm-hmm. Because they're out there, you know, in the jungle, they don't have measuring cups, and they don't know, like, okay, my child weighs this many pounds and yeah. this is how much I should give them only. And so a lot of the small children, they just go to sleep and they don't wake up. They just die because of overdose. So we were very, very lucky to have not been overdosed.
Yes.
But slept through the majority of yeah. the journey through the jungle. And then once mm-hmm. we got to there is a very dangerous river that comes between Laos and Thailand. And that is also the place where a lot of people die. So they either get shot in the jungle, and there's landmines everywhere. So while you're going through the jungle, you know, there's families that would come across other families that, you know, accidentally slept on a landmine or stepped on a landmine and blew up the whole family. You'll find like kids that were left behind because, you know, they were injured, or the family, the older adults were, you know, blown up, and mm-hmm. there's nobody there to take care of the babies. So you have like little babies that are still alive and barely making it. They weren't harmed, but they're still alive. It's just like a lot of broken and torn up families of just within the whole escaping mm-hmm. the jungle. And then, you know, you coming to the Mekong River, trying to cross it, that was like another obstacle because they would have soldiers that would come down the river.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I think about the Mekong River, I've never been back since we came to the States. I've never okay. been back. But from what my parents described to me, you know, we have Google. And so when I Google the Mekong River, I look at it and I'm like, oh, that little tiny thing killed, you know, thousands of Hmong people. Like, to me, it didn't make sense. But my parents had said that depending on the seasons and stuff, you know, you're dealing with monsoon season, the current can kill, you know, people and take families. And not only that, but because we were in Laos is considered a third world country, mm-hmm. a lot of us didn't know how to swim either. And yeah. so you'll hear stories of people trying to cross the river at the wrong time, being taken by the current, or the soldiers coming down the river and just shooting everybody alongside the bank. Or you'll hear people like blowing up garbage bags and tying it as floaties to get across the river. And so luckily with our family, my uncles and them sent my parents money to bribe some of the soldiers. And so they did come with rafts for us, you know, because you always have like traders.
Yeah.
And so my dad, all he was carrying was a gun that he found with no bullets, and he was using it to basically threaten them. I think he had one bullet in there that he tried really hard to chisel to fit into the gun, and that was it. And so any time that he felt like our lives were being threatened, he would threaten back with that gun. He didn't even know if it was gonna fire or anything, yeah. you know.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's how we got across on the raft. So the most traumatizing yeah. moment for my mom was when she realized that the raft that she was on with my sister and I was sinking. So there was a hole in the raft and it was sinking, and my mom did not know how to swim. So, and of course, you know, again, she's 7 months pregnant. Yeah. And so she started panicking, and anytime that we were moving was just in the night, you know, in the nighttime. Yeah. And so here we are crossing the river in the dark, and her raft is sinking, and she can't scream out for help because we don't want anybody to hear. And luckily, some of the uncles that were traveling with us, they're not blood related, but mm-hmm. you know, because they were there with us for the entire journey, we just in our culture, it's appropriate to greet everybody with you know, kind of like a salutation. Like you just can't call somebody by their name.
Yep.
One of the uncles, he knew how to swim, so he actually jumped off his raft and came and swam and pushed our raft across safely.
Wow.
To the banks of Thailand. And that was where we were met with other people that were in the refugee camps already, and so they brought us into the village and hid us in one of the camps, and we just woke up the next day and blended right in with everybody. And we stayed there for a few years, and then we got sponsored to come to the United States.
Yeah.
And so we landed in Wisconsin, and I've been here my whole life. So since I was 8.
So how long were you? So 8. So 4 mm-hmm. years in the refugee camps.
Yeah.
The Vietnamese soldiers just didn't touch Thailand. You know, maybe it was a political arrangement that they just knew they couldn't attack.
Yeah. I don't really know like all the politics behind it, but it was just not controlled by North Vietnam.
Okay.
And so they just stayed on the Laos side.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have Thai officials that, you know, run the refugee camps in Thailand. Sure. Now it's not like that anymore. But if you go back into Laos, it's still very strict. If you stay in the villages, you know, you still have the North Vietnamese still patrolling the villages, and you'll still have people that have gone back to visit and don't come home.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So
people don't go back because it's dangerous.
Right. And especially if they know that they served in the war, if they come back and they get their names ran up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So word gets around really, really fast. And hang on. Yes.
My name is Chan.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mom. You so everybody knows. I have Lydia in the room too, if you hear her. Mom's getting it done. So Laos is still technically independent, but still right? North Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's like we go to school and we hear about the Vietnam War and all that, but we never hear about, you know, what happened. Like what actually happened. Like how so from the civilians of Laos, from their side, they actually call that war the secret war. And if you Google it, mm-hmm. you'll find a ton of information because it was kind of like the Americans kind of hid that that negotiation with the civilians.
Yeah.
And so they didn't want to expose that they got civilians involved. And when they pulled out of Laos, they kind of left all of us to fend for ourselves. Yeah. And a lot of people were just executed because of that, because they knew that, you know, we didn't have the American, protection anymore. And so that's why a lot of people fled because of that too.
It reminds me of the Afghanistan situation.
Yeah. And I, you know, even though like hearing the whole situation with Syria, like it really got to me because it was something that a lot of our Hmong people connected with, you know, knowing how it felt like to be persecuted and like run out, you know, have like run us out of the country.
Yeah. You said something earlier of like, so if somebody is Hmong, uh-huh. they are from Laos. Can you help clarify that?
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to explain because people ask, is that my country? And yeah. and the Hmong people, we do not have our own country. I believe we're like one of the only few ethnic groups that do not have our own country. So we originated from the mountains of China long before China became China.
So yeah, so before China was a country, so that's why you're not Chinese,
right? Yeah. And then it was taken over from, like, I know a lot of historians have found traces of our culture and our people, like even it's still in the mountains of China. Okay. And if you a lot of people have traveled to China and they'll still find like artifacts, from like the Hmong people tribe. But we are considered a people of the mountains. And I guess back then they said that the Hmong people were very, very wealthy. And I think that was something that, you know, was, I guess it was something that maybe the Chinese wanted to take and
sure.
yeah. And so, I feel like that part of our history was kind of wiped out once it became China. And so a lot of people don't know that that is where our origins are from, as from the mountains of China. And then that's when people just like, you know, started, we're like nomads, you know, so we moved. So you have a lot of people in Laos. You even have Hmong people in Vietnam. You have people in Thailand. And then after the war, a lot of people moved to the US. And then you even have people that even have relocated to France, because Laos initially was kind of run by
a French colony.
Yes.
So like a Laotian, is that what you would say? Somebody from Laos?
Yeah. So, or yeah. Laotian. Yeah.
So like they originated from Laos.
Yes.
So people, when they had to flee from China, just, you know, landed anywhere, they might've landed in Laos. So that's why, but you would say, no, we're not Laotian. We are Hmong.
Yeah.
But okay, this had to happen where somebody from a Hmong tribe would marry somebody from Laos. Then, you know, maybe it's a silly question, but what would they be considered?
So in our community, there is definitely a lot of that. You do have some Hmong people that have married, Laotians. Mm-hmm. And so in our cultures, in both cultures, whatever family you marry into, if I'm a woman and I marry into a man, that is not the same background as me, that is the type of person or the ethnic group that I would become.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So if it was a Laotian that married a Hmong man, then, you know, she would become a part of the Hmong community. Now, if a Hmong woman married a Laotian man, of course, she would become a part of the Laotian community. And I feel like that's a tradition that is practiced in both of the cultures.
Okay.
So, yeah, so we have a lot of similarities, and obviously we have a lot of, differences as well. The language is completely different. Yep. Our clothing, our traditional clothings are completely different. Our practices are completely different. Okay. Religions are different, you know, so.
Okay. So, speaking of that, I think that's really helpful because, and this is why I love stories, because you would never have gotten me to sit down and listen to the Vietnamese war, understand what Laos and Hmong people even were. But when, you know, back 10 years ago, but when it's wrapped around a story, it actually brings it to life. I can visualize it. There's people and faces behind the, you know, these stories. So let's kind of bring it back to, so the Rise and Climb podcast is definitely faith centered in the sense of there's typically something bigger helping us when we have these hardships. I honestly don't know your religious or spiritual background. So can you describe what that's for you and or your family and maybe back when this was part of, escaping? Yeah.
So in Laos and Thailand and even in Vietnam, I do know that even when I was born, I knew that there were a lot of people like missionary, people doing missionary work and coming into these countries to help, help educate, on faith. Mm-hmm. And we just never really came across it until we got into Thailand and we were sponsored by a Catholic church in Milwaukee. And so when our family came to Wisconsin, my dad, the Hmong religion or faith is animism.
Yes. Okay. Cause I know it's shamanism.
Yeah, it's the same thing. But basically they believe that, or we believe that, everything has a spirit. And when somebody is sick or somebody gets married, we do animal, animal sacrifices.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that's a part of the Jewish tradition as well.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm different. Obviously would be different, but yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely a part of the Old Testament.
Yeah. And so we do have shamans in our community that would be kind of like the middle person, the person that travels, between this world and, the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. And they would, if I got sick, their mission would be to travel into the spiritual world and retrieve my spirit back. Oh,
yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah. So I do remember, that was the religion that my family did practice. Mm-hmm. New Year is really big because you're ringing in the new year. And so they want to make sure that basically your spirits cross over into this new year. And so they do this whole new year blessing and, you're eating a lot of meat, chickens,
yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't until we came to the United States and my dad was the one that kind of initiated the change. So okay. So we came here and he was just like, hey, it was a Catholic church that sponsored us and we're in a new life, a new country. So we should do something different, something mm-hmm. new. And uh-huh. and he was just like, I don't want to follow the old ways anymore. And so we did start going to join a Catholic church in Milwaukee. And I believe we might have been with them for maybe a year or two.
Okay.
And my dad had two brothers that had moved from Colorado to greet him and live with him here in Milwaukee. Yeah. And so they were attending this Catholic church already. And so we went to go join them for a few years. And then from there, I don't really know the reason why my dad decided to not continue his, our journey with the Catholic church. I have my own opinions, but yeah. I don't know what my dad's opinion is.
Sure.
And so then he left the Catholic church and then we started going to I guess you would call it a more of like a non-denominational church, but it's known as Christian Missionary and Alliance.
Yep.
So, yeah. So that's the church that I basically grew up in. And okay. Yeah.
So was that a big deal when he started a new faith tradition?
It wasn't a big deal because he had two of his brothers that, followed, followed along, or they must have all decided to, leave the Catholic Church together.
Yeah.
So he had their like the backup of his brothers. So yeah. That wasn't a big deal, but he did have a bit of an issue with the two older brothers.
Okay.
So these were the two older brothers that, really, really played a hand in the Vietnam War and basically mm-hmm. funded his entire way, to the States. And so he, they obviously weren't happy. They're like, you need to go back.
The two brothers had a issue. And those two brothers, did I catch that right? They were the ones who funded him?
Yes.
Coming. Oh, that's a sticky situation.
Yeah, they funded him. And so, okay, a little background about my parents. Both of my parents are orphans. So my mom lost her mom when she was 18, and she's the baby of the family. And then my dad lost her mom. My dad lost his mom when he was only 6 months. And 6 months old. Yeah.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah. Okay. I know you nurse. Let me tell you the most heartbreaking thing. Somebody told him when he got older that when they saw him again, they're like, oh my goodness, when your mom passed away when you were only 6 months, and how I remember that you were 6 months was because you had just started learning to crawl. And so in Laos, when somebody passes away, it's not like this glorious coffin and, they're on this stool or anything like that. They basically just lay the dead. You know, there's no embalming or anything like that. So they basically just lay the dead out on the ground. And so he had just started learning to crawl. And there's no formula in Laos, okay?
Yeah.
And so he had, while they were doing the ritual, he had crawled up to my grandma and tried to nurse.
Of course, because he sees people.
Yeah, and it was just like, that was like a memory that a lot of the people, you know, remembered because they were just, you know, they were just like so heartbroken seeing that he was so young and
you would have his mom no idea. Oh my God.
Yeah. So with them both being orphans, it was kind of, you know, in our culture, when one parent is gone, they just consider you as an orphan. So my grandpa, from my mom and my dad's side, they were still around. But obviously they in our culture, we practice polygamy.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
sure.
My grandpa, my paternal grandfather, he had three wives.
Okay.
And yeah, so my grandma, my dad's mom, she was the first wife. And then he had two wives after that at the same time. And then with my maternal grandfather, I don't know a whole lot about him. I just know that my mom, you know, went to school and left the village when she was like 12, and then she returned when she was 18, and then her mom passed. And then she decided to go back to school.
Yeah.
She was just so heartbroken about it. She went back to school, met my dad. They got married, and then they lived with my maternal grandfather for a little bit. And then, you know, we left, but, my paternal grandfather, he eventually passed. And so my dad's older brothers were just like, you know, you need to come back to the, you know, our faith.
Yeah,
because when we die, what are we going to say to dad, you know?
And
you know, since my dad, since our family became Christians, my dad was like, hey, look, when we're dead, we're just dead. You know, if he's still mad about it in the afterlife, hey, I have somebody bigger to answer to. So I think I'll be fine. You know, if you guys want to still hold grudges after you're dead, then that's what it is. And So there was quite a bit of like bitterness between them that's, you know, been going on. And then just until after his oldest brother had passed, then, you know, things kind of calmed down a little bit.
I find it's usually always something deeper and bigger, you know. It's not just there's a lot of that hurt there for another reason. Obviously that story, I don't know, you probably wouldn't say that story is the most difficult part of your life, maybe for you, or would you? What do you feel like your biggest obstacles are
in
life with that?
You know, At first I thought that my biggest obstacle was just adjusting to living in, you know, in America, because when we were in Thailand and in Laos, I felt like everybody put this picture of how America is supposed to be, you know?
Yeah. how did they portray America? It's always scary.
Yeah. Like, okay. So they said that, they have these huge houses, like America's kind of like you travel into the clouds, and that's how nice their houses are. And under their porch, there's trolls and all that, you know, it's just like ridiculous things. And so, so it was kind of scared. You know, it was kind of scary coming to, the States until you realize like, oh, it's not that scary. But then, you know, when we came, it was in 1989. And so in in Milwaukee, it was just like a slow but growing population. And sure. Yeah, and it's, you know, it wasn't very diverse at that time yet. Yeah. And so a lot of the people in the community were, you know, here they are just seeing a bunch of, you know, Asians coming in, mm-hmm. and they don't know anything about us. And, you know, going to school and like, how do I get used to eating American food, you know, because I'm just so used to, again, rice and water because we were so poor.
Yeah.
And we lived, my family, I felt like we survived off of, you know, of donations, thrift stores. My parents would buy curtains and my mom had to learn how to sew and she made pants for us. Oh. And we, you know, and kids, they don't know any better. So they made fun of us and, you know, they would tell us that, oh, you smell different. You eat different. How come you wore that outfit last week? Why are you wearing it again? That outfit looks like, you know, so out of style. Why can't you afford something else, you know? And it was, you know, I thought that was, a hard adjustment, but
makes
I
me
felt like
cry thinking yeah. of like what you guys came from.
Yeah.
And then yet you still have those kids struggles.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. Gosh. Oh, that's hard and confusing.
Yeah. Know? I mean, we were so poor. There's like six kids. And then my parents and we were in a two bedroom house.
Yeah.
And my parents, you know, like all the education that they had in Laos, like was nothing when they came here because my parents became teachers in Laos.
Yeah.
So my dad taught social studies and my mom taught, you know, the language, the Laotian language.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is like an English teacher here. And so when they came here, it was like none of those credentials, you know, mattered. They were nothing. And so my parents had a hard time finding a job. I remember like during the summers, they would go pick strawberries. And, you know, being 8, 9, and 10, my parents they left their newborn with me. You know, that's illegal now. That's illegal now, but
to, you know, them back too, they're like, this is so safe.
Yeah.
Like there's not landmines.
Right.
Nobody's trying to shoot us. There's no river. My kids are trying to cross. Like they're right. in a house. They're safe.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what was going through their minds at that time, but mm-hmm. to me, again, you know, I was just like, oh, here I am again, sleeping next to my 2-month-old baby sister, yeah. While my parents go and pick strawberries, you know, see you in a few hours. And then they would go pick worms to sell at bait shops. They just like found like every, you know, little job that they can do, that would just give them money, you know? And then we wow. would, yeah, we would go to like shelter homes for food,
yeah.
you know, almost every day. And then even for Christmas, we never had Christmas presents. If we were lucky, we had, like a family that would donate through like the Salvation Army. And so our first Christmas tree was donated and then all of the presents were donated. You know, and to us, we were like, oh, that's a pretty good life, you know, but to my parents, like I know one time, you know, being the oldest, you catch,
yeah.
you catch things, you know,
yep.
I did remember one time my mom broke down and she was just crying and she was just like, I didn't think that, you know, we would end up here. I thought that we were coming here for a better life and here we are struggling, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they made so many sacrifices. Yeah. So we never went out to eat. We never even knew how like McDonald's tasted or anything like
yeah.
that. And anytime that my parents wanted to treat us, it would be like, oh, if you guys did good in school, we'll take you guys out to McDonald's and you know, you guys could split a burger or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so to us, it was like a real treat.
Yeah. Now, are they still alive? Now?
Yes. Yeah, my parents are still alive.
So what do you know what they would attribute to what got them through that, those times?
They have said it so much that it's their faith and God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the church helped tremendously. And I know that not only did the church help them spiritually, but I feel like they owed a lot of their children's like growing. Mm-hmm. To the church too, because they, you know, the church provided a lot of guidance. Mm-hmm. That's where I felt like I found, you know, like my friends.
Yeah.
And so we, even though we were so poor and we saw like so many shelter homes and all that, you know, the other side of the story is just either the shelter homes or church, shelter homes or church, yeah. You know? And so they became our families. And my parents have, you know, every single time we get together and we talk about the past, my parents always, always say that, you know, they owe everything to, you know, to God. Even back then, they said, they always say like, you know, back then when we were running through the jungles, we didn't know who God was,
yeah.
But we truly feel like we are here because he knew who we were before we even knew who he was.
Wow.
And he's the reason why we are all here safe. Yeah.
Feeling protected in those moments, even though.
Yeah.
So what fast forward to today, mm-hmm. I'm sure your parents are in a better financial spot. You know, that was kind of the beginning. Where do they kind of end up? So, did they learn English for themselves?
Yeah. So, so they did learn English. My dad did go back to school. So he has his associate's degree in machine operating. And when he was, you know, going to school for his associates, obviously he had to learn English, and then he would teach my mom. And then of course, us coming back home, we would teach, you know, my parents English too.
Yep.
And then, you know, unfortunately, like in the Hmong community at that time, it was very common to see young people get married. And it's very common even back in Laos, like once you turn 14, 15,
yeah.
You know, they consider that as, oh, that's the age that you need to get married.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're born and then they just prep you for marriage to be somebody's wife. And mm-hmm. So I thought that, hey, I saw a bunch of my friends getting married and I thought,
yeah,
this was the next step for me. So, you know, I got married at 16, and I thought that the struggle was adjusting to the American, you know, life, but it was my, my marriage at 16, yeah. You know, that was the hugest challenge for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you are wanting to hear more about C's story, please stay tuned and listen to part two.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please give Rise and Climb a 5-star review or share it with someone you think who would equally enjoy it. If you also feel so led, you can support this podcast with either a one-time donation or monthly subscription to help pay for sound and editing equipment that helps produce more kingdom-driven and relevant-to-the-times content. God bless.